So this is text number 7, page 226. Is that going to pick up the sound enough? Or do you want to move it closer?
Maybe move it. Okay.
Barely see it. Okay. They didn't have these when you were coming up, did they? It's a new thing. Hey, text number 7. Yada yada ki dharmasya.
Yada yada ki dharmasya.
Lanir bhavati bharata.
Lanir bhavati bharata.
Abhyutthanam adharmasya.
Abhyutthanam adharmasya.
Tadatmanam srijamyaham.
Tadatmanam srijamyaham.
Yada yada, whenever and wherever, he certainly, dharmasya of religion, glanihi, discrepancies, bhavati, become manifested, Bharata, O descendant of Bharata, abhyutthanam, predominance, adharmasya, of irreligion, tada, at that time, atmanam, self, srijami, manifest, aham, I. Translation. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. So let's read it together. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice,
O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself.
The word Srijami is significant herein. Srijami cannot be used in the sense of creation because, according to the previous verse, there is no creation of the Lord's form or body since all of the forms are eternally existent. Therefore, Srijami means that the Lord manifests himself as he is. Although the Lord appears on schedule, namely at the end of the Dwapara Yuga, of the 28th millennium, of the 7th Manu, in one day of Brahma, he has no obligation to adhere to such rules and regulations, because he is completely free to act in many ways at his will. He therefore appears by his own will whenever there is a predominance of irreligiosity and a disappearance of true religion. Principles of religion are laid down in the Vedas, and any discrepancy in the matter of properly executing the rules of the Vedas makes one irreligious. In the Bhagavatam it is stated that such principles are the laws of the Lord. Only the Lord can manufacture a system of religion. The Vedas also accept, as originally spoken, the Vedas are also accepted as originally spoken by the Lord himself to Brahma from within the heart, from within his heart, Brahma's heart. Therefore, the principles of Dharma or religion are the direct orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharman tu shakshad bhagavat pranitam. These principles are clearly indicated throughout the Bhagavad Gita. The purpose of the Vedas is to establish such principles under the order of the Supreme Lord, and the Lord directly orders. Or I should say, and the Lord directly orders. Emphasis is on the directly. At the end of the Gita, that the highest principle of religion is to surrender unto Him only and nothing more. The Vedic principles push one towards complete surrender unto Him. And whenever such principles are disturbed by the demonic, the Lord appears. From the Bhagavatam, we understand that Lord Buddha is the incarnation of Krishna who appeared when materialism was rampant and materialists were using the pretext of the authority of the Vedas. Although there are certain restrictive rules and regulations regarding animal sacrifice, for particular purposes in the Vedas, people of demonic tendency still took to animal sacrifice without reference to the Vedic principles. Lord Buddha appeared to stop this nonsense and to establish the Vedic principles of nonviolence. Therefore, each and every avatar or incarnation of the Lord has a particular mission, and they are all described in the revealed scriptures. No one should be accepted as an avatar unless he is referred to by the scriptures. It is not a fact that the Lord appears only on Indian soil. He can manifest himself anywhere and everywhere, and whenever he desires to appear. In each and every incarnation, he speaks as much about religion as can be understood by the particular people under the particular circumstances. But the mission is the same: to lead people to God consciousness and obedience to the principles of religion. Sometimes he descends personally, and sometimes he sends his bona fide representative in the form of his son or servant or himself in some disguised form. The principles of the Bhagavad Gita were spoken to Arjuna, and for that matter, to other highly elevated persons, because he was highly advanced compared to ordinary persons in other parts of the world. 2 + 2 = 4 is a mathematical principle that is true both in the beginner's arithmetic class and in the advanced class as well. Still, there are higher and lower mathematics. In all incarnations of the Lord, therefore, the same principles are taught, but they appear to be higher and lower in varied circumstances. The higher principles of religion begin with the acceptance of the four orders and four statuses of social life, as will be explained later. The whole purpose of the mission of incarnations is to arouse Krishna consciousness everywhere. Such consciousness is manifest and non-manifest only under different circumstances. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. So, notice that the whole chapter so far has been about the appearance of the Lord. The first we hear about is his appearance within the sun planet. And then he said he comes again to reestablish. Remember, he said the disciplic succession is broken. Now I'm reestablishing it again. So here's an instance. That disciplic succession being lost or broken, scattered, is another instance of what is described in this verse as dharma shaglani, or the disruption of religious principles, discrepancy in religious principles. So notice in this verse two things: dharma shaglani and abhyutanam adharmasya. One is the decline of dharma and the rise of adharma. Adharma means irreligion. Dharma is religion and adharma is irreligion. So it's like a pan balance. You know, you've seen those balances. You have two pans on either side. And when one pan goes up, the other goes down. Like that. So it's like that. When dharma goes up, adharma goes down. When there's a rise of religion, then irreligion goes down. And similarly, when irreligion increases, religion goes down. These are antagonistic principles, religion and irreligion. They can't be together in the same place at the same time, and one has to prevail over the other. So when there's irreligion or demonic people are prevailing, then the religious people are subdued, put down, or confined, or not allowed to operate, and vice versa. So these two principles are antagonistic principles to each other. So sometimes the balance becomes disturbed. And so he says, whenever there's a disturbance in this balance, when there's too much irreligion, that's when I come. In another place it's described that there's two classes of people, devotees and demons. Sura and Asura. And these two groups are always different programs. So sometimes they come into very heavy conflict. And it said, like, out of the conflict between the Suras and the Asura, Krishna appears, just as when you rub two pieces of wood together, flame appears. So you'll see in the history, for example, Nrisinga Dev, there's an Asura, Hiranyakashipu, and the Sura, his son, Prahlad. So out of their conflict, he appears. Or when the two are churning the ocean of milk, there are three incarnations that showed up at that particular time. Tortoise, on the incarnation at the top of Orion, at the top of the mountain, and Mohini Murti, she shows up also. So whenever these things are there, whenever these two groups, they get into especially tight contest, and it looks like the devotees are going to be vanquished, then Krishna comes out the same way out of the friction of two pieces of wood rubbed together. Arani wood specifically is the wood that's used like that to start sacrificial fires. The flame comes out, so Krishna appears. So he says, Prabhupada says here, that there's a schedule, like one of the chapters in Bhagavatam is called Scheduled Incarnations with Specific Functions. And there's two features, general features of the Lord. A, his incarnations are scheduled, and two, they have specific functions. So Krishna appeared on schedule also, in the 28th millennium of the 7th Manu. There's 71 millenniums in a Manu. There are 14 Manus in a day of Brahma. So in the 28th millennium of the 7th Manu, that is the time for Krishna's appearance. So he appeared on schedule. But at the same time, he's not obliged to do so, because he says here, yada, yada, whenever and wherever. So he can. He has a rule, but he doesn't. He sets up a general framework, but he's not obliged to follow that framework. So he appears, and the word for appear here is shijami. Shijami, and Prabhupada makes the point that it's significant because it cannot be used in the sense of creation. The word, the root Shrij, S-R with a dot under J, that's the Sanskrit verbal root. It's used in the basic kind of concrete sense of to let something fly or to let something go, to discharge, to throw, to cast, to hurl at, you know, to throw a stone, that's Shrij. You send it out. So it also means to admit, to pour forth, to shed, to cause to fall, like to cause rain to fall or to cause a stream to flow. It's also Shrij. To admit from yourself, to procreate, to produce. These are all the senses of Shrij. So it's emitting or emanating or throwing out. It doesn't mean create. So this time when he descends, it's this sense. This is the word, sense of the word Shrij. It cannot be used at that time, you know, I manufacture a body for myself. No. He's not created. He manifests that form down here. It's Shrij. That's the sense of the word Shrij. So he appears whenever there's a predominance of irreligiosity and a disappearance of true religion. So the next thing Prabhupada covers in the purport is how the maintenance of religion is Krishna's responsibility. Dharmam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. This is the path of religion is enunciated directly by the Lord. That's the principle. No one else has got the authorized to make up religion. It comes from Krishna. This is why, this is his function, and his Vishnu function, he's the world maintainer. Like Brahma creates, Shiva destroys, but Krishna maintains. So his maintenance is especially to maintain religious principles in human society. Now, he has to appear again and again because anything that's placed in this material world is going to gradually fall apart. Even something like the path of God. Religions decay over the course of time. Just as we've already had the instance in this chapter of a disciplic succession becoming scattered or broken. So similarly, in course of time, any path of religion or any church or historic tradition, let's call it any religious tradition, any parampara that is established by God, the chances are it will, sooner or later, it'll become weak. It'll get mixed up with modes of material nature. It'll become compromised. It'll be a compromise with sense gratification. And then when the compromise of sense gratification is there, then it's no longer effective. People don't understand it anymore. Spiritual potency is not prominent anymore. So then Krishna makes adjustment. Then when these spiritual traditions become weak that he's established, then they have to again be revived. So that's his. So it comes from this Vedic principles. They come from God. The purpose of the Vedas is to establish such principles under the order of the Supreme Lord, and the Lord directly orders at the end of the Gita that the highest principle of religion is surrender to him only and nothing more. So that's the goal of the Vedas, to surrender to Krishna. The Vedic principles push one towards complete surrender unto him. That's a nice sentence to memorize. What are the purpose of the Vedas? They push one towards complete. Sometimes they don't directly say complete surrender because people are not ready. But they push one towards complete surrender. So therefore they're maintained. And whenever such principles are disturbed by the demonic, the Lord appears. So to give an example of such a appearance, he cites the example of Lord Buddha. So the Vedic principles, in their effort to push one towards complete surrender, it wants, its ultimate principle is non-violence, that you do not cause unnecessary harm to any living being. Therefore, Vedas restrict animal slaughter. It's actually the actual principle that is forbidden. But it's understood that because people will do it anyway, therefore it's licensed with restrictions. Sometimes you have to take that course. Okay, if we just forbid it, some people are going to be so bad that they're going to do it anyway. So let's license it in a restricted way, and this way we can get these people under control and gradually purify them. That's how the Vedic principles work. That's why it was allowed. But then on Vedic pretext, animal slaughter started. That the people began to violate the Vedic principles and slaughter animals, but sanctioned it by saying, well, it's authorized in the Vedas. So that is where Lord Buddha appeared, and in order to establish the Vedic principle of nonviolence, he had to deny the authority of the Vedas. We can understand that was an emergency measure. But in this way, he established ahimsa as a Vedic principle, and he stopped animal slaughter. Therefore, things could begin to become restored again. It took a while to restore them, but anyway, that was the Lord's plan. So in a similar way, the Lord appears. And it says he preaches as much as people can understand according to time, according to place, and according to circumstance. So people wonder why there are different religions and why sometimes they seem to be in conflict. Well, the conflict is only apparent. Because sometimes, because of special purposes, because of special circumstances, the Lord speaks in a way that the people he's dealing with can understand. And according to his purposes, so the emphasis may be different. He said, not just in Indian soil either. So, of course, here's a referral to Jesus Christ, reference to Muhammad. They're all sent by Krishna. He says, his son or servant or himself in some disguise form, his prophet. These are also accepted as advents of the Lord for his purpose. So they preach as much, but the mission is the same, to lead people to God consciousness on obedience to the principles of religion. That's always the mission. But what he preaches, according to the circumstances, how much people can understand. So he says, therefore, they appear higher and lower. Now, Prabhupada specifically says the Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna because he was highly advanced compared to ordinary persons in other parts of the world. He was already in a Vedic situation. He already accepted what Prabhupada says the beginning of higher religion, which is Varnashram Dharma. Already accepted the four regulative principles. Yes, that's understood. So already he was highly advanced compared to other people. So therefore, Bhagavad Gita could be spoken, and it is higher scripture. It's more advanced scripture. So Prabhupada gives a mathematical example here. 2 + 2 = 4. That's a basic principle of arithmetic. But I've seen 2 + 2 = 4 written in very strange ways. I'm trying to think of the name of the field of mathematics now. Sataputta gave me this example. I forgot what it's called. I have to look it up. I used the example for something else in my doctoral dissertation. No, I forgot. But there's a higher field of mathematics where 2 + 2 = 4 is written in a very strange and unrecognizable way. So, or you may get 2 + 2 = 4 in set theory if it's written in a funny way. You may not recognize it. Or in algebra, 2 + 2 = 4 could be, you know, x plus x equals y. You know, that's 2 + 2 = 4. So somebody who only knows arithmetic, he sees these higher forms of mathematics. You know, I don't know. This isn't mathematics. So there are high. The mathematical principles are there, but sometimes they're higher and sometimes they're lower. So, but ultimately, there's no conflict. They're just on higher levels. There's arithmetic, for example, and there's algebra. In arithmetic, you have instead of having numbers, you have variables like x, y, and z. And those variables represent any number. And you have formulas which represent relationships between any numbers. And then you have calculus, where x, y, and z don't represent any number, they represent any formula. So in this way, there's higher and lower mathematics. But the higher includes the lower. And all incarnations of the Lord, therefore, the same principles are taught, but they appear to be higher or lower in varied circumstances. So this is the example of mathematics. A very, very good and useful preaching example. You run across this all the time. This, what's in this purport, is very, very useful because people will ask, here's a whole thing about comparative religion. They're different religions, because people sometimes they see these different conflicting opinions and they say, well, I don't believe in any of them. Or they say, I believe in all of them and don't follow any of them. The jack of all trades and the master of none. What you have to follow. You pick one and you follow it. So, but this explains how there's different religions and yet how there's really no conflict. Although there might be, it's because when Krishna appears, he may have to, according to time and circumstances, he gives higher or lower principles. But here we understand that Bhagavad Gita is higher. The higher principles of religion begin with acceptance of the four orders and four statuses of social life, as will be explained later on. That's Varnashram Dharma. Only in Varnashram Dharma can the higher religious principles be fostered. That's the environment that protects religious principles. Yes. Sure. The pious works recommended for people. They're given to do various sorts of pious activities. And sometimes people understand that that isn't the highest thing, but at least the highest thing. Other people may understand that that is the highest thing. They think that's all there is to it. So that also you find in the Vedas. Some people think there's nothing more than this. But other people understand the ultimate purpose is different. Well, you find that. But usually things are mixed with fruitive intentions. I haven't seen anywhere where bhakti is so clearly distinguished from karma and jnana, from mental speculation and from fruitive activity. For most people, religion means pious fruitive activities. Almost always. And it's not very clearly you, like in Christian tradition, you can see there are people that know that they're different, that there's something higher than pious fruitive activities. They know that the pure love of God is also there. But it's not distinguished sufficiently clearly. And it's all mixed up together, and therefore not very many people, although it's taught, not very many people are directed toward it in a very clear way. It's thought that once in a while somebody shows up who's really weird, called a saint, who somehow or other is higher than everybody else. And we admire and worship such people. But sainthood is a practical thing that everybody should aspire to. No, that's them. They're a little weird anyway. They lead funny lives. They upset their parents. Yeah. I do that when I find somebody. She's asking, I don't know if everybody can hear, the Krishna says that why should not disturb the minds of the unwise, that they're attached to the fruit of section of the Vedas, so better just let them be engaged. So if you meet people of some other religion, well, should we do a similar thing? And if I meet somebody who's like a very devout Christian, just like Prabhupada would do the same thing, meet somebody who's a very devout Christian, attached to Christianity, then do you say yes, but be a better Christian? How do you do that? First of all, you follow Lord Jesus, thou shalt not kill. Because that they're not even doing. And the problem is, of course, but if they go in that way, then they'll gradually learn that it may be very hard to be a good Christian within the Christian community because there's so much bad association. And that the only place you can actually be a good Christian is maybe in this community, where the association is better. But they may not be ready to hear that. So if they're not ready to hear that, then you just see see what a person is ready to hear, and then you teach them according to what they can understand. Yeah.
Oftentimes, when we meet a person like that, if they're really into God, you know, and they can feel that we're kind of saying, well, a lot of times we can give them one of Prabhupada's books,
right.
And in the privacy, in their own privacy, they begin to believe like mm-hmm. that.
You'll meet Christians who are high or lower. Some Christians are fanatical, and because they're not on a very high level, and they won't see you as, you know, they'll see you as some, you know, evil thing coming from the devil. Others, more pious Christians, they'll recognize, they'll be able to recognize somebody that's spiritual, even though maybe doctrinally, according to the official teaching, you're not supposed to be, but they'll recognize that you are, and therefore they'll be attracted, and therefore they'll take something. Yes?
What happens to some is they get so into the word of Jesus that they realize that the church is just, totally
accurate. Yeah. You know,
that's right.
And then you find out, where's that church? You know, this is the teachings of Jesus, but there's no community anymore. That follows very, very, very well. But you need that community. It's very, very hard to have spiritual life all by yourself. Almost impossible. That going off by yourself and prosecuting spirit, first of all, nobody prosecutes spiritual life in the company of demons. The people who want spiritual life, they either go off by themselves. That you have to be very, very strong. Or better is you get in a community with other people propagating spiritual life. Then you have strength, real strength. And that's the general principle. So actually, the first principle of spiritual life is you have to associate with devotees, and you have to avoid those who are demonic. Yes. Yeah, but if they're super attached, what can you do? You can try to tell them, but if they're not accepting, then don't waste your breath. There's so much resistance, you don't preach the glories of the holy name to the faithless either. It says in the Bible, you don't cast pearls before swine. You don't give valuable pearls to pigs. He says, do not cast your pearls before swine or give what is holy unto dogs. That's the second part. So we also, if you meet people, swine and dogs, you don't preach to them. Any other questions about this verse?
Couldn't someone say that since it says that there's an incarnation comes, that Krishna sends his representative sometimes in different times and circumstances and doesn't give the full teaching. Couldn't someone say, have a guru, different groups who have gurus from India say, couldn't they claim that their guru is the representative of Krishna for this age? All of them on that.
Be achieved in the Kali Yuga by chanting. So are they teaching that? No. Who's teaching chanting? That's the Yuga Avatar. Krishna Varna Tusha Krishnam Sangopangasta Parashadam Yajnai Sankirtana Parai Yajanti Hi Sumedasana. It's a statement in Bhagavatam. So that's what they should be teaching. Now, several of these people, I've heard, have told their people, if you really get advanced, you should go study under Swami Bhaktivedanta. Who told us that they were told that?
Well, that girl who came here, she said that her teacher said that, they asked the teacher, her teacher said his highest realization, yeah. He was talking about his highest realization, and he said his highest realization was of Krishna and the blue boy of the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
And so they asked him, they said, was this philosophy all that was to be gotten in the Siddha Yoga School? She asked this to his successor, and she said, actually, that those who want more can go take that path and go work higher.
Right. Some people will say that. And somebody else told me, I forgot who that, I think it was maybe Maharshi Mahesh Yogi told them that. Yes, the highest pass is actually taught by Bhaktivedanta Swami, but you aren't ready for that yet. There's a little cheating there, because everybody's ready, but that's what they told them. Sometimes they'll say like that. But they should be judged by standards. But especially if they're teaching atheism or impersonalism, then that can't be accepted at all.
I have a question. So, it's like I was speaking to one of my friends. When a person is actually taking up, when they're a little pious, they want to do something in society, but they're really into becoming educated, and they have a leaning towards spiritual life, but they're into becoming educated. Then how do we how should we speak to them?
Well, it depends on the person. I mean, this is the education that's worthwhile. You waste your student years learning material things, you should look how Prahlad Maharaj spoke to his students. Don't you think that you have plenty of time and now you can get your education and engage in material life, and then later when you're old man you can take up spiritual life? And Prahlad said, old age means just before you die. So who can say that they're not an old man? It's an emergency situation. Because nobody knows when they're going to leave their bodies. So old age means just before you die. So you shouldn't really waste a minute. So Prahlad Maharaj said it's better to begin while you're young. It's better to begin now and don't spend the first part of your life as you're playing. In the middle part is you're involved in sex life and fruitive activities. Then the last part, when you're going to pick up, you'll take up spiritual life, you're already all burnt out and senile, and your body's falling apart, and you're just trying to get a comfortable place to sit, you know. So actually, the best time to begin spiritual life is now. And no one should sacrifice anything for their spiritual life. That's your business. It's your first business. That's your real education. So, I mean, there's a principle. If you're interested in spiritual life, then you accept everything that's favorable to Krishna consciousness and you reject those things that are unfavorable. Now, if a person insists, all right, go ahead, it doesn't mean the end of the world, but it's actually not the very best thing to postpone spiritual life for too long. You know, if you only got a semester or something, you can finish your semester, but not cause too much of an uproar. If you have, got to postpone your spiritual life for 2, 3, 4 years, while you get that degree, that's wrong. It's also one of the things that spoils spiritual life is endeavoring very hard for something difficult to achieve. Some material thing that's very difficult to achieve. Over-endeavor for something difficult to achieve. So whether it's money or education like that, you should be satisfied. You should be satisfied. As far as that real education, this is it. Anyone have any other questions or comments? So, Dominic?
I didn't quite understand what it meant in the last sentence of the purport, which is such consciousness is manifest and non-manifest only in the different consciousness.
Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, I know it refers back to that.
Yeah.
What does it mean, like, only in the different...
Well, because Krishna consciousness is the natural consciousness of the living entity. So according to their material circumstances, more or less manifest or unmanifest. So especially when religious principles are very strong, Krishna consciousness becomes very manifest. When religious principles are weak, then that Krishna consciousness becomes covered. And that same thing as religious principles are also manifest or unmanifest, and only under different circumstances. The religious principles are eternal. So these religions, they're not created. It's the same religion. There's only one religion, just like there's only one consciousness, Krishna consciousness. And there's only one religion, which is to develop love of God. So that one religion is taught more or less in different ways in different places, but the principle is the same. So similarly, that consciousness, Krishna consciousness, that's the natural energy of the living entity, is Krishna consciousness. But it's either manifest and unmanifest according to their material circumstances. That's my understanding of that, okay? Okay, we won't get any further than that today. So until tomorrow, please drop off.
Jai. Shri Ravindra Shroop Ki Jai.